When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hi, everybody. Chuck here on a Saturday with my Saturday Selects pick from June 3rd, 2010. I think I picked this one because I just got done watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood once again. Here is our episode, How Flamethrowers Work. Have you seen that movie? You know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, hope I didn't spoil it for you. So learn all about flamethrowers right now.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. That makes this Stuff You Should Know, right, Chuck?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Jerry, just I love it when like we get last second instructions.
Yeah, and they don't make any sense.
Just save it for the show, guys.
Right, or show that picture on the podcast, the audio podcast.
Oh goodness, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. It's by all rights Friday, but it's actually Thursday. But it's almost Memorial Day.
Yeah, and we're not. Are you coming in tomorrow at all? No.
I'm not comfortable saying either way.
Okay. Well, I guess that'll be a surprise.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Well, I'm not.
I'm still scared of the man. I know you're not, but you're all like, hey, look at me. I'm 40. I make my own decisions.
I'm not 40.
Yeah. So, Chuck, you're a George Carlin fan, right?
Yeah, the late George Carlin.
Yes, the late.
R.I.P.
Always add the bummer, don't you? Yeah. The late George Carlin. You couldn't be like, George Carlin, he's the greatest stand-up comedian ever.
When no, he was alive, like he
the
was.
Very, the worm food George Carlin.
The dearly departed. Yes, I like him. Why?
I have an obscure stand-up bit that I'll bet you haven't heard of that is apropos of our topic today.
Let's hear it.
So George Carlin had a bit about flamethrowers.
I never heard that one.
He said that the very presence of flamethrowers, and I'm paraphrasing.
Sure.
The very presence of flamethrowers means that at some point, sometime, someone said to himself, you know, there's a bunch of people over there that I'd like to set on fire, but they're too far away for me to get the job done.
Right.
I wish there was something that I could use to throw flames on them.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, we now have the flamethrower.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy.
When you think about it that way, it is pretty interesting.
It is. And when you start to really look into flamethrowers, you realize just how horrific the acts that humans inflict on other humans can be.
Yeah.
It's pretty awful stuff, actually.
Yeah, actually all kinds of modern weaponry. I know my brother-in-law's in the Marines. He told me about this, I think it's called a flechette, some sort of bomb that like explodes above people and sends thousands of like razor blades shooting out.
What?
Yeah. I think it's mainly used for clearing like jungle. But
yeah,
I can't
clearing
remember.
Jungle of enemy combatants.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So some sicko thought that up.
Yeah. We're like, what, one step away from the alien weapons in District 9.
Yeah.
Where people just blow up in an almost cartoonish fashion.
Right.
Yeah. It's coming 2015.
Sure. The atomizer or something they'll call it.
Yeah. What's odd is that that first person that George Carlin envisions actually lived a lot longer ago than you would think.
I was shocked.
I was as well. You want to take
it? 5th century BC?
5th century BC, man.
Right. It wasn't, well, it was a flamethrower. It was a very crude, vulgar, if you will, flamethrower. It was a long tube, sort of like a blowgun, and they filled it with solid stuff like hot coal and sulfur.
Mm-hmm. And went,
yeah. Ideally, you don't suck in. That would be bad.
No, I was thinking that, too. Like, you have to suck in the breath before you put the tube to your mouth, or else right. you're in big trouble. Although, that's the case with any blowgun, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Did you ever make those when you were a kid?
No, I never did. Right. I was too busy burning stuff.
you could have done both, apparently.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So, yeah, they would shoot, I guess, hot coal or sulfur out at their enemy combatant.
Right.
Instead of a flame, per se.
Yeah. Which I guess ultimately it would bounce off of their arm and they'd be like, ah, it burns.
Right.
And then they'd just tussle and leg wrestle and,
right.
and shake hands afterwards right. and go eat a boar. That's how that went down.
Life in 5th century BC with Josh.
But leave it to the Greeks, who were one of the brainiest, most thieving cultures of all time.
Oh, yeah.
They probably got this idea from the Chemites, frankly. But there's this stuff called Greek fire.
Right.
And actually, I can't say that the Greeks came up with it. It's called Greek fire, but the Byzantines, what we know as Turks, were most notorious for using this stuff.
Yeah, and that they think, they're not sure because it was a long time ago, it was a mixture of liquid petrol and sulfur and like stuff like quicklime.
Petrol.
Mm-hmm.
It's British for gas.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And they would pump it out, actually, from a reservoir through little narrow tubes. And like anything that goes from a big reservoir-type system to mm-hmm. a small, thin one, it would create pressure to shoot it out.
Right.
And then some unlucky guy would be the lighter at the end of it. And that would be like a real flamethrower, like dozens of feet.
Yeah, as we're going to learn, anybody whose job it was to deal with any aspect of flamethrowing was the unlucky guy.
Yeah, I would say so.
It's one of the more dangerous weapons you sure. can use.
Yeah.
But it was very effective. Number one, since it's oil-based, it could this Greek fire could be used in naval battles.
Yeah.
Because it would still burn even when it contacted the water.
Sure.
And so the Byzantines mounted it on their ships, these flamethrowers.
Yeah.
On their ships and on the city walls around Constantinople.
Yeah.
And basically just repelled people out of fear as much as, you know, burning them alive.
Yeah. Their enemies were really freaked out, I imagine, when they first saw, like, fire shooting at them.
Yes. Freaked out and intrigued.
Sure.
Especially in the case of the Chinese. See, what the Byzantines had was a single action pump.
You just did the foot pump with, like, you literally did the bellows.
Do you see that? Uh-huh. Do you see that, Jerry? I'm following your command. The Byzantines had a single action bellows pump
right.
to where when you press down on the downstroke, it would push the liquid out, right?
Yes, yeah, so you get like a burst of fire and that's it.
Right, because on the upstroke, nothing was happening except
right.
the bellows were filling back up with air to press down,
right.
to compress, right? The Chinese said, hey, that's really funny because we have a double action bellows
yeah.
to where you are compressing air on the upstroke and the downstroke. So instead of your stupid little short bursts of Greek fire, we have one long burst that
yeah.
just cuts you in half.
Yeah, leave it to the Chinese. Make
yeah.
it all better.
The wheelbarrow, the kite, the hang glider, the flamethrower.
You name it.
Gunpowder.
Uh-huh.
And actually, gunpowder equaled the demise of flamethrowers for about 1,000 years, right?
Yeah, as soon as gunpowder came along, they were like, eh, we're just chumps with fire when we can actually shoot a gun. That's the way of the future.
Right.
And it was, but so is the flamethrower, as it turns out.
Yeah, because it lay dormant for about 1,000 years. And then in World War One, actually right before World War One, the Germans, a very warlike state at the time, were they said, you know, what exactly can we add to our arsenal that is just totally scary and wildly destructive?
Yes.
Let's look back through the annals of you know, historic weaponry and uh-huh. find something. And they looked through and they said, the flamethrower.
Yeah, Richard Fielder is an engineer in 1901. They credit him with inventing it, but he clearly was using old technology as the initial idea, at least.
Right. It's a clever design, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because from this original design, there have been, you know, some polishing moments for the flamethrower over the years. But from that modern era, the
right.
design has remained relatively the same, right? It's like a three-tank design.
Yeah, the Flammenwerfer.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Nice.
The Germans. That's what the Germans call it.
The Lederhosen?
Yeah.
And it was, let's go ahead and explain how it works with the tanks.
All right.
And this is the handheld flamethrower, which is the one that's, I guess, was most readily used in combat.
Yeah, and it's the one you see, like, a guy's wearing these tanks on his back, and he's got the rifle, and it's just...
Right.
Yeah.
So you got two outer tanks, and those are filled with the flammable fuel, oil-based petrol, if you will, like Greek fire.
Sure.
And then there's a center, smaller tank, which holds a compressed gas, like butane, and it would feed the gas through a pressure regulator connected to the tubes.
Right.
And you can take it from here.
Well, this is why I think it's very clever. The butane served a dual purpose. One, it was compressed, so when you open the valve, it would push the liquid fuel out of the tanks into the tube and ultimately in the reservoir and the gun.
Yeah,
right?
The pressure regulator.
Right.
Is what they would switch on.
There is another tube that came directly out of the third tank that held the compressed gas like butane.
Yes.
And this tube went directly to the ignition valve.
Right.
Right?
So it served as the igniter later on.
Right. Because it was the butane that was actually burning.
Right.
When you... when you open the ignition valve, mm-hmm. the butane flows to the end, mixes right. with air.
The end of the rifle.
Right.
Sure.
And then there's like there's two triggers. There's the fuel release trigger, right?
Yes.
And then there's the ignition trigger. And the ignition right. trigger is basically you're operating a battery that operates a spark plug, sends a current, generates heat, right. ignites the butane. Now you have that little blue flame on the end.
Yeah, that's what you see in movies. Like if you see them like traipsing around. Yeah, exactly. You see the little like 3-inch flame coming out the end.
Right. That's actually butane burning.
Right.
The fuel hasn't been released. The hellfire has not been opened yet or released yet. That's when you squeeze the fuel release trigger?
Yes.
And then
Then that pulls back a little valve plug because you obviously want it plugged or else you're going to have a big mess on your hands.
Yeah.
You'll be on fire very quickly.
Yeah.
So when you pull the fuel release trigger, it pulls the little valve plug back and then all the fuel supply suddenly rushes through to the tip of the gun where the flame is mm-hmm. and boom, there you go. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1942, the Army Chemical Warfare Service, I think is what it was called, they came up with a little something called napalm.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately a gasoline or petrol, mm-hmm. in the case of Chuck and our British friends, a gasoline thickening agent.
Right.
So with a slightly thickened gas, uh-huh. you have a longer range. It right. carries further because it has more mass or girth or whatever. There's less there's less friction from the ground coming up, right?
Sure.
And it also can be concentrated more easily.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically that was one of those real big polishing moments. It went from just gas, which sprays, to thick gas, which sticks.
Yes.
And burns. It evaporates much less quickly, so it'll burn forever, and it's really difficult to put out. And if you get covered in it, you're entirely in trouble.
Yes, you're out of luck. And they would mount these on, PT boats for one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen the videos of those things, like uh-uh. cruising down the river, shooting napalm mm-hmm. into the forest?
Well, I see there's a picture of it in the article, but
yeah.
I've never seen video of it.
It's pretty wicked.
Yeah.
In
and they call them Zippo flamethrowers, right?
Oh, really?
Because the ignition system failed so frequently. It's just like on a gas grill.
Would they have to light it with a Zippo?
With a Zippo.
You're kidding.
No.
And that's the other unlucky dude, I guess.
Yeah.
He'd be like, don't get too close to it with his hand.
Right. And so flamethrowers, it wasn't just some guy, you know, where it'd be like a bunch of infantry guys and then some guy on the end happened to grab the flamethrower that morning when they went out, and it's just, you know.
Right, right.
They were part of a tactical strategy.
Yeah.
What would happen was riflemen would lay down cover fire.
Right.
Let's say you come to the mouth of a cave and there's a bunch of enemy combatants in there and they're shooting you and they have snipers and you're in big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
All your riflemen lay down fire on this cave so those guys can't move.
Cover fire.
Right. Mm-hmm. To allow your flamethrower man to get close.
Who is highly susceptible at this point because right. of what he's wearing on his back.
Yes, all it takes is one good shot to one of those tanks, and that guy's gone.
Right, or a bad shot, just a shot.
Sure, yeah, uh-huh. if you come in contact with it with the bullet.
Yes.
But so the flamethrower guy gets close, basically cooks everybody, burns everyone to death in that cave.
Yeah.
Right? That's his job.
Right.
And then after that, the munitions guys come in and explode the cave so it can never be used again.
And that's sayonara.
Yeah.
For cave dwellers.
Yes.
You know, speaking of a quick death, I've always heard when I was a kid, you know, that, you know, if you were a flamethrower in war, your average lifespan is like 30 seconds in combat.
Is that right?
Well, I always heard that, and I scoured the internet, and I could not find anything to verify that. But that's what I always heard. I thought that was an interesting tidbit.
I did read that most people who were flamethrower operators didn't survive.
I would imagine. It's a pretty dangerous thing to be toting around.
Yeah, and they also had assistants because the assistants would open and close the valves on the pack for them. That was
their
whole job.
It was always a two-man team.
So both of them would usually not make it.
I would, if I was the assistant, I would turn on his little valve and then run for cover and then run up and turn it off again.
Right.
And I'd probably be pretty unpopular with the flamethrower guy.
Probably. I mean, the flamethrower guy was well-liked because if you can take out an entire gun nest of people,
oh, yeah.
then, you know, everybody's going to applaud you and clap and,
sure.
you know, probably not get too close, though, because you're going to die eventually.
Yeah, I'd rather be a sniper, I think. That'd be, like, I play Call of Duty. I got a PS3 now. Did I tell you that?
No. Wow, Chuck.
It was given to me by my stepdad? No, father-in-law.
You did tell me.
My stepfather-in-law.
Okay.
And so I got just a couple of games. I'm not like a huge gamer at all. Like I think a Nintendo, like the first Nintendo was the last thing I actually owned.
Mm-hmm.
But I play Call of Duty now.
I like shooter games too.
It's pretty fun.
But you choose to be a sniper on that?
Well, no, there are just certain levels where you can be a sniper. Like you'll pick up a sniper gun if you want.
Gotcha.
And I always usually kind of just hang back and pick guys off.
Yeah. Especially guys with flamethrowers.
No. Here we go again. Two liberal peaceniks like us. When it comes to like this war stuff, we just get all giddy.
Well, it is this one for some reason. I was reading a passage about a flamethrower operator in World War II who, you know, received the Medal of Honor for invading a Japanese. I think they're called pillbox. It was a little gun nest
and burning them all
alive. And mm-hmm. like the guy wrote that there were some muffled screams and then silence.
Wow,
it's like. You know, being burned alive is pretty much everybody's worst death.
I would think so.
It's up there.
Well, we had worst way to die. That's right up there.
And I think, if I remember correctly, burning to death is consistently the number one on, like, informal polls, right?
I imagine it's pretty painful.
And it happened a lot in World War One, two, Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mentioned Korea. This is a horrible weapon, you know?
Absolutely.
But you can find civilian applications for it, can't you?
Yeah, well, before we move on to that, we also need to say that they were on tanks as well. So it wasn't just boats. They used them on tanks. And the design was basically the same. You just had a lot more fuel, and you had, like, piston rotary pumps to get a lot more length on your shot.
Girth.
And girth.
Yeah, the backpack-mounted ones
right.
had a range of about 50 yards, right?
Yeah,
46
I think so.
Meters.
That's a long way, though.
Yeah. That's half a football field. You don't have to get that close.
Sure.
Yeah.
I wonder if the first enemy that was like, he's got a flamethrower, but we're way too far away.
Oops. They were within like 45
yeah,
yards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host, Pico Ortiz, and our abuelita, Liliana Montenegro, play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Pico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as Abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over Abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if Chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita First as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Civilian applications, forest fire fighters.
Forest firefighters?
Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
they actually use these when they do the prescribed burning. Like sometimes they'll burn, well, not just the firefighters. They do prescribed burns anyway.
Sure.
And then sometimes the firefighters do that. They'll like burn a section to cut it off right there.
Right.
And that's what they do it with flamethrowers.
Yeah. Which actually kind of made me want to go get a job with the Forestry Service.
So you could burn things on purpose?
Well, with the flamethrower, yeah.
Did you hear about this car thing in South Africa? Theft deterrent system that burned you?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's still around. This was like 12 years ago. And a South African man invented, it was called the Blaster. And basically it would shoot a man-high fireball, is what they called it.
What?
At you if you tried to break in to the car for a mere 3,900 rand, which is about
$650.
And this was $1,998. No, it was like $650.
Okay.
And it would squirt liquefied gas from a bottle in the trunk through two nozzles located under the front door. And the rub is you couldn't turn one on and turn one off. So if a guy was breaking in to like the driver's side door, it would still shoot fire out of the passenger side.
Wow.
To whomever might be walking by, unluckily on that side.
That's an invention that wasn't fully thought through.
I would think so, but apparently he sold a bunch of them at the time, and he said it's non-lethal, but it would definitely blind a person, is what he said. and keep them from stealing your car.
Yeah, because they can't see cars any longer.
Right, exactly.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Way to go, South Africa. Lastly, Chuck, fire breathers, they're a form of, they follow the basic principles of flame throwing.
Yeah.
By drinking kerosene.
Yeah.
There you go. If you want to learn about fire breathers, we have an article on them. If you want to learn more about flamethrowers, and before you send us a listener mail, we are aware of flamethrower exhaust systems. We've both seen grease before.
Yeah.
You can type any word you want to into the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. It'll yield something interesting, I guarantee you that. So, Chuck, listener mail.
I'm going to call this... I love this dude, and his name is Guy.
Okay.
And not as in, hey, Guy. His real name is Guy.
I gotcha.
Guy from San Francisco says, guys, just listen to the Art Theft podcast. And by the way, we do know about the Paris heist that just went down.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
Very intriguing for future monetary incentive. Neither here nor there. However, I have a little habit that I thought I might like to share that loosely pertains. I have never stolen art knowingly. However, I do frequently and I'm subjected to... I travel frequently and I'm subjected to much distasteful art. Guilty of being a budget traveler, so there's the rub. But to amuse myself, I like to take the horrible art off the wall, take it out of the glass and frame, and add the ever so slightest detail.
This guy's wonderful.
He does this in hotels. A chicken in the corner by the barn, a seagull flying over the crest of a wave... a beer bottle and fishing pole by the babbling brook. I do it in every hotel, motel, hotel, hostel, bungalow, you name it, I will stay there and I will change the art.
They have art in hostels now?
Eh, probably not. It makes me chuckle to think that maybe one day someone will be staring at an awful hotel painting and look closely and notice one of the gallant cowboys has a tin of skull by his left boot heel. So... if you stay in cheap hotels, keep your eyes out, people. You may have stayed where a guy from San Francisco has stayed. Just don't turn on the black light. That's all I have to say.
That's awesome. That is awesome, man. I love to hear of people doing cool stuff.
Vandalism.
Yeah. But it's vandalism with like an eye toward coolness.
It's fundalism.
Right. Well, if you're a starving artist who shows your work at the Airport Hilton Conference Room, we want to hear from you. Just send us an email to stuffpodcasts@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.